We now open the debate. Paul Boyd Lee.
Paul Boyd Lee, General Synod. Thank you for inviting me. I believe I'm the main speaker opposing this motion, so I have my full time for that. 10 minutes. Well, the subject is certainly full of fizz. Even the word Episcopal is an anagram of Pepsi Cola. But to the serious business of the proposals, we're not here to talk about whether women should be made bishops or not. That's already been decided. It's the mechanism behind that, where a sizable number of people are seeking proper ecclesiastical recognition for an Anglican tradition which up to now has been guaranteed by our church. Not a few people in a corner doing their own thing, but it embraces Anglo-Catholics, evangelicals, central church, women and men coming from a range of churches, small rural ones to large urban growing congregations who disagree with the legislation as presently drafted and feel it's more secular than theological. In 1993, the Church assured traditionalists that legal provision for Resolutions A and B, together with the Act of Synod, would remain for as long as they were needed by anyone. In fact, the previous Archbishop gave the view to Parliament that provision offered by the Act would not be rescinded, yet now this is proposed in the course of action. The draft measure removes this legality. The resolution will be abolished, along with flying bishops, who might be replaced by those given delegated limited authority at the will of the diocesan rather than the archbishop as now. All safeguards will be taken away, which for many people that still need them is a mortal blow to the whole association they have with the Church of England. Thus, in essence, this is a justice issue. Delegated episcopal oversight meets neither traditional Catholics' desire for sacramental assurance nor evangelicals' need for male headship. It's a fact that the revision process was faulty, because when General Synod voted to send the measure to committee, it did so only on assurance that all options would be explored. Indeed, GS 1630, a note from the archbishops, invites the drafting group to prepare a range of options that it would then submit for consideration by the House of Bishops before first consideration of the measure by Synod. That revision committee decided in principle that statutory provision for all integrities should be made. It then voted down every option for making such provision, so the process was incoherent. The archbishops indeed tried to introduce statutory provision by an amendment, which was supported by the majority of Synod members. It was defeated by 5 votes in the House of Clergy. Thus, the majority will of Synod was overturned, and the House of Bishops is now the place to correct it. Hence, the need for a following motion, if we come to it, which invites them to do this. It's unhelpful that our system only allows the final code of practice to be formally laid before Synod after the main legislation receives royal assent. Meantime, a draft we might have agreed may be changed, and more importantly, at any time in the future, by a simple synod majority. Its force in law is questionable. Internet websites will tell you this. Beside that, the House of Lords suggests that the content of a statutory code of practice doesn't have the binding effect which statutory provision would. Even if it had the force of law, the only recourse for aggrieved people would be expensive and uncertain judicial review in secular courts, something our church could well do without. Yes, codes of practice rely on trust, which is not breached, and that operate in a fair and acceptable way. Sadly, 20 years' experience now shows that trust is indeed breached. For example, the last archbishops assured guaranteed place for dissenters. Also, there have been examples at local level of hurt, intimidation and so on against those who dissent. Beyond that, even greater tensions exist in the worldwide Anglican Communion over what is fair and acceptable. What people need, regardless of their way of being church, is love and assurance that their way has an acceptable place within the life of the Church of England, as it has done for centuries. There's nothing archaic about that. It merely flakes up the fact that these people are part of a long tradition of serving God in that particular way. If the current wording is needed to authorise and unify the episcopate, that's strange, because it severely restricts the broadness that our church is used to. On the one hand, we make great ecumenical efforts, with some churches having widely different customs to ours, including the role of women's ministry. Yet on the other, within our Church of England, we travel towards schism. It begs the question, how inclusive are we? If we are, then surely it follows that unconditional provision must be made for all views, including those that are unable to accept women bishops. Will transferred jurisdiction instead of delegated set a precedent or usurp the authority of a diocesan bishop? I think not. It will hardly set a precedent, as it always happens, as it already happens elsewhere, such as our ecumenical partners, where office holders, be they a Roman Catholic bishop or Methodist district chairperson, are treated equally, even though their duties and geographical areas overlap with ours. We're here in the Roman Catholic Diocese of Clifton, as well as that of Salisbury, remember. Also, the Anglican Communion oversees, has provinces within provinces, each holding different views, maybe. The Bishop to the Forces has jurisdiction in various dioceses, Salisbury being one. So, each leader is respected by their counterparts, but neither has total jurisdiction within the other's remit, and it works. So what's to be done? Dissenters need to be treated as equals. Parishes and clergy of one integrity should have the same rights as parishes and clergy of the other. Just as important as pastoral and sacramental care is need for jurisdiction in confirmations, clergy deployment, selection, ordination, doctrinal observance, and so on, in a way acceptable to people of this view. In other words, not just giving a bishop to manage its extinction, but rather one with the power and authority to be able to build up the whole life of this community as part of the body of Christ. Might this delay things? If at all, it's only going to be slight compared with a measure not passed by synod, which would bring long delays. That's a real possibility as things stand, because of the number of different interests in synod. Loss of traditional Anglo-Catholics and conservative evangelicals would lead to a much impoverished church, numerically, theologically, financially, and politically. So to conclude, the archbishops remind us that a resolution of the 1998 Lambeth Conference declared that those who dissent from, as well as those who are sent to, the ordination of women to the priesthood and episcopate are both loyal Anglicans. Surely, conscience and respect for convictions honestly held within the church are treasures we do well to preserve. The crucial issue is whether a provision is offered so all integrities can thrive within the Church of England. So it's important to get the House of Bishops to amend the draft legislation to incorporate acceptable protection for all loyal and faithful Anglicans. Voting against today's motion doesn't stop the process of women into the episcopate. That task rests with General Synod. Our job is to guide them in the sort of legislation we feel is proper and fair. So in order to do that and further it, I ask you to vote against the motion. But if you feel obliged to vote in favour and it passes, then for the sake of your brethren, at least vote for a following motion. Thank you.
Thank you.